Right, welcome. It's nice to see you all again. We're working through spiritual foundations, and we've done all sorts of things. And So I'm just going to do a slight recap of over the last few weeks. We've looked at forgive and release. We've looked at identity. We've looked at our mind. And today we're going to look at our emotions. So we're not going to launch straight in on the emotions. We're actually going to recap a little bit. So we were created in eternity. God knew us before we were formed in our mother's womb. Before we were born into this realm as a physical being, we existed before we had a physical body. We were first created as a spirit out of the heart of God. So we are made in God's image and God is spirit. God wrote a book about us and what our destiny should be, which is contained in our spirit. So in heaven, before we were ever here, God knew us. He created us, and every single one of us has got a plan and a purpose and a destiny. So the natural way of thinking is that we have a physical body, with a soul on the inside. However, we are a spirit. First and foremost, we are a spirit being that has a soul, which is our mind, our will, and our emotions, that lives in a body. So it's the opposite way around to what we would naturally think. So the real you is the spiritual person. That's who God created in eternity. Now, when we become Christians, this is where our thinking needs to change. Because up to this point, everything about us is fed from the outside. We live as body, soul, and spirit. So we live with our physical needs being met and our emotional being met from the world around us that we live in. We are totally led by our soul needs. So at salvation, that's when we come to Jesus. That's when we ask Jesus into our life, or we come to the foot of the cross, or born again, or whatever you want to describe it, however you want to describe it. Our spirit becomes reconnected to God and we have a relationship with him that transforms us from the inside out, which is the opposite way around from what we've always functioned. So we need to learn to live from the inside, from our spirit, instead of from our natural needs. But we are connected to heaven and all its resources, and this now forms the basis of our new life. We need to learn to grow our spirit so we are spirit-led and become more like Jesus and learn to live a supernatural lifestyle. This basically means unlearning everything and starting again God's way. So what was God's intent? Why did God make us? Well, we've looked at this in depth in another thing. We could just look at Adam. In the garden, we knew that Adam and Eve were created by God. They had an intimate relationship with God. They walked with him. They talked with him. They lived a complete supernatural lifestyle in dual realms. So they lived physically, but they also were completely connected with God. And Adam had significance. They both had significance to rule and subdue the earth. That was their purpose, to rule. They were safe and secure. God provided for them. Everything they needed was in the garden, provided by God and in their relationship with God. And they knew that they belonged because they had an intimate relationship with God. So we were all being created with the same needs that Adam and Eve had that were met in God. Acceptance. We all need acceptance. We all need affirmation. We all need love. We all need to belong. We all need a purpose. We all need security. Those are the basic needs that every single one of us has, because that's what God intended. That's how God created us to be. So God's heart and intention is for all of these needs to be met in him in an intimate relationship. Unfortunately, again, we looked at this in detail, due to sin, due to what happened in the garden with Adam and Eve, we are all now born separated from God, because spiritually, when they chose the wrong pathway, when they were disobedient, when they rebelled, again, whatever you want to say, their spirit was separated from God and they no longer walked in unity and intimacy with God. So from that point in time, our families that we are born into in this realm physically are the demonstration of expression that we learn and draw from. Our belief and value systems for life are formed in our families. Now, we've seen this diagram before in another world, but on the inside of us, we have a seed bed, if you like, and we call it soil. And because we're disconnected from God, it's a soil of insecurity. Everything that happens in life, words spoken, things that are said, things not said, events, everything in life is like a seed that affects us, and it goes down on the inside of us. And if we don't deal with it, it takes root. And from that root, we produce fruit. And what we're going to look at today is some more of the fruit that is formed when we have things that occur to us, that happen to us, that go down into our hearts, into our souls, that affect us and shape us and the way that we live. And the soil of insecurity can result from a lack of acceptance, affirmation, appreciation, encouragement, love. Your list may be different. Your list may go on and on and on. But basically, life's events shape us, and we form everything from that place. So the soil, the heart can be insecure. The seeds, there are offences, things said or done or not said and not done. Roots, the things you think or feel, responses, emotions, attitudes, the fruits come out, the things you say or the things that you do. In our lives, whatever we do on the outside of us, behaviours, attitudes, words, are fruits of something that is down on the inside of us. So what I'd ask you to do today is to be open, and if God starts to show you anything on the outside, you think, oh, yeah, that sounds a bit like me. We need to be saying to God, what's the root? Where did that come from? Why am I like that? Because the good news is God wants to heal us and to set us free so that we are unrestricted. So there are two basic emotions that we all experience, love and fear. Most other emotions are variations of these. Our soil type on the inside of us will determine which kind of seeds will take root. If you have an amazing, secure soil on the inside of you, then you are going to very readily be able to receive love and affirmation and acceptance. So if you are secure on the inside, when someone says to you, Graham, you're so amazing and awesome, Graham will say, thank you very much, I know I am. If, on the other hand, Graham's soil on the inside is more likely to be rejection or lack of affirmation, and I say, Graham, you're so amazing, you're so wonderful, you're so awful, he'll have little voices, nobody did it. He'll have little voices in his head that say, no, I'm not. I'm not. No, I'm not. And that's what we're talking about, because that seedbed on the inside determines how we live and how we function. So our soil type on the inside will determine which kind of seeds will take root. Thoughts, feelings, and behaviour come from either a place of love, acceptance, or fear, rejection. Anxiety, anger, control, sadness, depression, inadequacy, confusion, hurt, loneliness, guilt, shame, mistrust, rejection, to name a few, are all fear-based emotions. Happiness, peace, trust, hope, compassion, acceptance, contentment, satisfaction are love-based emotions. Okay? God's ideal is that we function from the latter. But sometimes we need to do a bit of work to get us to that place. Now, we looked at this last week. We are in a battle. Before knowing God, we were separated from Him. Now we belong to God. We have to take on a whole new belief system. We need to be transformed from the inside out. We know that we're a new species, that we're new creations. We're all those new things because we looked at it before. But there's a process that we need to go through. And the nature of the battle is lies. Now, these things may not have been lies for me up till this point, but anything which is opposite of what God now says about me and what God's truth is for me is a lie from the enemy, and I no longer need to live under that. But I might have a little bit of a process to get from one to the other. So lies will be the way I've always done things because I've been in control and I've looked after myself and I've had to sort everything out, versus the truth, which is God's way, which is what God says about me, which is His provision and His resources. None of us escape this. And I was watching this week a documentary interview on Rihanna, who is probably one of the most influential celebrities of our time right now. She is known everywhere. She is probably one of the most successful women. She is everywhere. A very, very humble woman. But she talked about exactly her life as to what we said, how her life has shaped her up to this point in time. And she was expressing her brokenness, her woundedness, how her family background shaped her up to this point in time, the choices, the decisions that she made. Because of that, none of us escape. It's not about how much money you have, how significant you might seem in the world's eyes. It's all of us. We start at that place of brokenness. And I mean, she's an incredible girl, and she talked about forgiveness and how she has overcome life, how she has overcome her obstacles, and it's all based in forgiveness. Now, I don't know whether she's got a relationship with Jesus or not. That's not my business. But she's taken hold of some principles, and forgiveness is the key. So we're going to look at that a little bit more. So it's really important for us to recognize in this process where we've been lied to. Where has life shaped us that we have been robbed? Because if we are going to renew our minds, and if we are going to take on God's identity, and if we are going to live in God's truth, what we need to know is, where have I been robbed? Where am I not living in God's best? Where am I not in freedom, but I'm in prison? See, the enemy wants to keep us locked up on the inside. He wants to keep us imprisoned. And for most of us, he's done a pretty good job. But Jesus came to set us free. And that's the whole message of the gospel, is freedom and relationship with God. The day you got saved, Satan lost you forever. But he can lie to you and trick you and deceive you into thinking that you haven't got free, that you don't belong to God, then he's rubbing his hands in glee. Because what that will do is keep you in your past, will keep you from your destiny, and will stop you being the person that God created to be. He will keep telling you that you're no good, that you're useless, that you're a failure, that you're unlovable. He will keep telling you those things. And it is only when you get the revelation of what God says about you in the inside that you can say, on your bike, I'm not that person anymore. God loves me. I'm chosen. You can't convince yourself of it. That's called striving and trying to earn it. And it's a dead work. It comes by having revelation from Jesus on the inside, and it will transform you. So identity is really, really important. But a lot of what I'm now saying, you probably think you said all this last time, is because our minds and our emotions are really closely linked together. And emotions for a lot of people is like, girly stuff, emotions, feelings. Just to say, emotions are from God. God wants us whole in every area. And where we come to him broken, with issues, fragmented, hurting, wounded, damaged. You know, I dare anyone to put their hands up and say that that doesn't include them in some way. This is the good news. The Spirit of the Lord, the Eternal, is on me. The Lord has appointed me for a special purpose. Now, I'm reading this as me because I know that God's called me to bring good news. But actually, this is for you too. This is who God's called you to be, to bring good news. He has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. That's not just people with no money. That's poor in everything. He has sent me to repair broken hearts, to declare to those who are held captive and bound in prison, be free from your imprisonment. Again, that's not just the physical prison. That's the prisons in our minds, in our emotions, in our lives. He has sent me to announce the year of Jubilee, the season of the Eternal's favour. For our enemies, it will be a day of God's wrath. For those who mourn, it will be a time of comfort. And for those who grieve over Zion, God has sent me to give them a beautiful crown in exchange for ashes. What's on your head? Do you look down because you're weighed down? Jesus wants you to look up into who you are. To anoint them with gladness instead of sorrow. To wrap them in victory, joy and praise instead of depression and sadness. People will call them magnificent, like great towering trees standing for what is right. They stand to the glory of the Eternal who planted them. This is who we are. This is what God says about us. And this is what he has got for us. Now, any form of abuse, sexual, physical, emotional, mental, or verbal, stunts emotional development. We develop coping mechanisms to deal with the way we feel when certain things happen. There's a story, it's a very famous story, so I can't claim credit for it, but it's very pertinent. There's a father, he has three sons. He's an alcoholic. When he comes home at night, he puts the key in the lock. The three boys behave very differently. The 18-year-old, as soon as he hears the key, the 18-year-old is up, he's ready to attack, he's ready to stand up to his father, he's ready for what happens. The 13-year-old, as the father comes through the door, says, "Hello, Dad, what can you do, Dad? Do you want a cup of tea, Dad? What can I do to help you, Dad?" The 9-year-old runs under the bed and hides in fear. Now, all three children, brought up in the same way, but deal with life differently and will develop methods of coping that they will then take through their whole lives. It's a well-known thing. It's called fight or flight. We develop it. What are we going to do in traumatic situations? The trauma caused learned patterns of behavior to cope with emotional responses, which they carried into adult life. How we are brought up in our early childhood, that is where our life patterns develop. That's where our coping mechanisms and our defense mechanisms are formed. If we are not wanted, rejection will be a big issue for us. If not secure, fear will be a big issue. If you're treated badly, injustice, anger, bitterness, hatred will be a big issue. We don't escape these things because we are emotional people. It's not right, it's not wrong. It becomes our normal. For these three reactions, they're not right, they're not wrong. Each one developed and coped the best way for them, became their then life's pattern. The reverse is also true. Positive emotions, nostalgia, huge business. How many people will have warm, fuzzy feelings at a thought of a past memory? For many people, it could be a granddad, it could be a family holiday, it could be an event in the past where it just makes you feel fuzzy on the inside. For some people, thought of a granddad could have the absolute opposite effect. Things affect us differently. Music is a major avenue for nostalgia, for emotional feelings. For me, if you put any glam rock on from the 70s, I go all warm and fuzzy. And I get really silly because that was my forming time and I love that music. For other people, it could be different things. So we all have triggers, good and bad. Unfortunately, what normally happens is the negative outweighs the positive. So my background, my memory, circumstances shape me. So when things happen now, or when things happen, I react in a certain way. Now, I don't know if any of you knew that Joanne bullied me at school, that Joanne Lane. She didn't really, but I'm going to use her as an example. So just imagine at school, Joanne Lane was the class bully. My reaction when I see her, if she bullied me, will probably be fear, anger, inadequacy. I want to run away from her. I will have an emotional response at the mention of her name. And I'm sure we've all seen that. Are you talking to Karen? Quite innocently. And Karen says, "Oh, I saw Jo Lane the other day." And she might notice that the sides of my face start to tense up, that my muscles start to twitch, that I start to... Because the mention of a name can trigger an emotional reaction of pain within me, even though that might not be relevant to now, because we store it. It affects us deep down on the inside. 10 years later, I might see Joanne Lane. And if I've still got that wound, I probably will run away. I could be 6'4" and she could be 3'0". But the emotional response will be there, and we need to be aware where we're carrying wounds and damage. I'm sure we've all known people, if we've not done it ourselves, who avoid places, avoid situations so that you don't see people. A now conversation can trigger a past pain. A now sighting can trigger a past pain. I did this myself. I had a very close friend who I was hurt really badly years ago now, and I felt really betrayed by it, and I would do anything not to see her. I would walk into town as a different way so I didn't have to go past her house. If I occasionally saw her, I would hide in a doorway so that I didn't have to see her face to face because of the pain that I felt on the inside. So emotional pain is overwhelming. It can be a trigger for addiction. For most people that I've spoken to, there has been a trigger at some point in time to cover up, to numb pain, because it's too much. It's too much to bear. Unfortunately, the pain comes back so that you have to do something else. The pain doesn't go away. We can cope with it by becoming bitter, angry people. We can project it onto others, or we can shut down in that area so that we won't be hurt like that ever again. We can be desperate to have our emotional needs met in others. We can look to people to fill our emotional needs, be people pleasers, always striving for acceptance. We can be relationship hoppers, jump from one relationship to another, or we can suck people dry because we're so needy. John 4:18 says, love will never invoke fear. Perfect love expels fear, particularly the fear of punishment. The one who fears punishment has not been completed through love. There is no fear in love. Dread does not exist. But perfect, complete, full-grown love drives out fear, because fear involves the expectation of divine punishment. So the one who is afraid of God's judgment is not perfected in love, has not grown into a sufficient understanding of God's love. The way to deal with these things is to know God's love on the inside, because in short, this verse says, perfect love casts out fear. And if you know that you know that you know that God loves you, you can deal with anything. But it's not knowing, it's knowing deep down on the inside of you. Sometimes, no matter how we try and change the things that we don't like about ourselves, we don't like it when we react negatively, do we? We don't like it when we have bursts of this, or we feel jealous, or we don't like it. Sometimes we can just pray and we can repent and we can ask God to change us, and we change, and sometimes we just don't. That's an indication of a stronghold, a knee-jerk reaction, like a prison on the inside of you, where you have built walls around to protect yourself. For some people who have had difficulty with their natural earthly fathers, it can be very difficult to relate to God. Because if you felt abandoned, if you felt your dad didn't love you, if he deserted you, if he was standing there, if he was very harsh and disciplinarian, the effect of that, when you suddenly come in contact with God, is you can expect God to be the same way with you. Which is the opposite, because God is love. And that can be an indication sometimes that we need to have some healing, we need to do some forgiveness, because the filters that we have in our lives, if I have a filter of rejection or abandonment, everything I see will be coloured and tainted by that filter, which will put me in prison. So God says, I don't earn his love, I don't have to perform, I don't have to strive to be accepted, he just loves me. Now that's the truth. Is that incredible?
Yeah.
Okay. What I feel is unlovable, unworthy, not good enough, rejected. This is the nature of the battle that we talked about. The lies, my experience, will have been true for me up to this point in time. The minute I come into a relationship with God, what God says can become my reality and my truth. And that's where we can be in a bit of a battle. Because what's right? The truth, God loves me. God is love. He chose me. He formed me in eternity with a plan, a purpose, and a destiny. His desire is that I'm in an intimate relationship with him. But what's true for me is rejection, pain, wounds, abandonment. And this is where my natural experience can rob me of my relationship with God. It's not denying it. It's not saying it doesn't matter. It's actually allowing God into those places of pain and wounds that we carry, so that he can bring healing and restoration, that we can come into our own identity. So don't ignore your feelings, but don't dwell in them. Don't let them keep you in prison. By getting to know God, I will realize where I've been robbed, where my life so far hasn't matched up to what God's heart for me is. Then I need to renew my mind, which we talked about, and I can see where my emotions and my feelings don't match up. So we start with our mind, and then we go underneath into our emotions. So why do I feel I need to learn acceptance? These are the questions that we then need to ask. Why am I like this? What has happened? Where have I been robbed? Because then I can recognize a debt. And Jesus came to set the captives free. He wants to cancel my debts, restore me, and make me whole. So I need to know in my knower. Now, your knower is that place deep down on the inside where you know that you know that you know. And no matter what happens, you know. That's where we need to be in our relationship with God, that we know deep down there. And that's all to do with our identity. And for many of us, we might have been told many times, just get on with it, just grow up, just this, just that, just the other. That's no good. We need to deal with it, acknowledge it, and deal with it. Now, emotions are to our soul what physical pain is to our body. It's a warning system, okay? It's your warning system that tells you something's not quite right. For me, if I'm honest, I know when something's going on because I'm touchy and I'm irritable and I'm ratty. Don't always like to admit that, but that's my warning system that I know. I can go with it or I could ignore it and be a pain to everybody. So your emotions let you know what's going on the inside. We have various ways that we can deal with our emotions. Suppression is the conscious denial of feelings. So you know that you feel something, but you don't want to go there. So you push it down. Push it down, stifle it, cover it over, deny it, ignore it, choose not to deal with it, thinking it's going to go away. How are you feeling? Fine. Anybody ever done that? How are you feeling? Fine. Now, we have, I don't know what it's called, but this is our definition of fine. Frantic, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. It's banned. You are not allowed to say fine. Or if you say fine, this is what we will assume, that you are frantic, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. It's a front. It says, stay out there. I don't want to go there. Why is it not good? Because our emotions are not dealt with. They are just squashed down on the inside. They can be a bubbling cesspit just under the surface, but I am fine. Thank you. Anger, bitterness, even hatred festers, just waiting to explode. Then a minor incident can trigger an outburst which doesn't match up. Yeah? What on earth is going on there? That didn't warrant that reaction. Well, it's because you said you're fine. You're not. Repression is the next one. And this is unconscious denial. So suppression, pushing it down, that's something that we consciously do. This one, unconscious, very controlled. This can occur if family background doesn't encourage emotional expression. It can be very difficult to know how you feel, and over time you become emotionally switched off. Won't display negative emotions. Very placid, lovely, thank you, would. But you won't display positive ones either. Won't know how you feel. Can appear to be very placid, stable, on an even keel. But actually, there's no emotional function. Can appear nothing bothers you, but your emotions are just locked on the inside. Indiscriminate explosion. Who can guess what this one is? I don't have a problem expressing how I feel. I can do it anytime, any place, over anybody. There. That feels better. But I've destroyed those around me in the process. Often I will have a root of anger on the inside and my emotions are out of control. Acknowledge. Now, obviously this is going to be the ideal one, isn't it? That we're all going to put our hands up and say, yeah, that's me. No. Be real. How you feel is how you feel. And this is a really important thing. How you feel is how you feel. You might not handle it correctly and we might have some work to do. But there's no point denying how you feel. Be real. In order to deal with your feelings, you need to accept that you feel a certain way. But because for a lot of people, it's not acceptable to feel that way, we don't deal with it and then we bury it. But it's still under the surface, festering. Ideally, as we go on in our relationship with God, we want to pour out our hearts to God and tell him how we feel. But sometimes we think we need to pray nice prayers. Do you know what? God knows exactly how you feel. He knows everything about it. He sees what's in our hearts. We can't trick God. You might trick me and I might trick you, but you can't trick God. He knows. He loves it when we are real and honest with him. And it's only really in that place that we can actually start to move forward. We need to do some repenting for reacting badly. He's quite capable of showing us. He's quite capable of telling us if we need to sort ourselves out. The most important thing is to be real. He wants an intimate relationship with us, and this can only happen in reality. If our feelings are negative, there's a root cause. Where there's a fruit, there's always a root. The fruit is the outward manifestation. That's what we say, how we behave, and how we act. But that's only the external. It outworks in our attitudes and behaviour. As we're getting used to the process, it's sometimes helpful to work this through with someone you trust. If you're new to this journey, if you're not very far along, find someone. Say, I don't know what's going on, but I'm not feeling very right. I'm feeling like this. Then we can pray together. We probably need to do forgive and release. But the good news is, you don't have to stay in that place. Often identifying the root cause will result in needing prayer for healing and freedom. Usually, forgive and release. Now, I'm sure we've all heard of David. I've quoted him before. He did some terrible things, but you know what? God said about him, he's a man after my own heart. He was passionate for God, but he did make quite a few messes in his time. These are some of the things he said. My soul is dry and thirsts for you, true God, as a deer thirsts for water. I long for the true God who lives. When can I stand before him and feel his comfort? Right now I'm overwhelmed by my sorrow and pain. I can't stop feasting on my tears. People crowd around me and say, where is your true God whom you claim will save? With a broken heart, I remember times before when I was with your people. Those were better days. I used to lead them happily into the true God's house, singing with joy, shouting thanksgiving to the band, and joining the congregation in the celebration. Why am I so overwrought? Why can't I just hope in God? Despite all my emotions, I will believe and praise the one who saves me and is my life. You see, our feelings can be overwhelming, but the start of moving forward is to choose. And he says, I will believe and praise the one who saved me. My God, my soul is so traumatized. The only help is remembering you wherever I may be, from the land of the in the roar of your waterfalls, ancient depth surge, calling out to the deep. All your waves break over me. Am I drowning? Yet in the light of day, the Eternal shows me his love. When night settles in and all is dark, he keeps me company. His soothing song, a prayerful melody to the true God of my life. Well, if David was a man after God's own heart, he certainly knew a range of emotions. He didn't try and hide it, did he? He was real before God, and then God met with him. Do I rule my emotions, or do they rule me? Question for all of us. People who are ruled by their emotions are often out of control. They live by how they feel. Last week, we learned that we live what we believe. What we believe about ourselves is how we live. This week, we're saying we also, if we don't rule our emotions, we live how we feel. And somebody who lives out of their emotions is all over the place. Because they will just do whatever seems right at that point in time, with no boundaries, with no grounding, and their emotions will rule them. It's important to realise that our feelings can lie. What do you mean, you say? The classic example is God says something and you feel something different. Your feelings are based on your experience, not on God's truth, and we need to learn to bring them together. How you feel may be true, but it may not be the truth. As Christians, we need to be able to bring our emotions in line with what God says if we are to live in victory. Emotions are a product of our thought life. If my thinking is out of control, so will my emotions be. The first step is ruling in my mind. If I'm ruling in my mind, I can bring my emotions in line, but not the other way around. If you don't bring your thinkings in line with what God says, you will never bring your emotions in line. You can't do it the other way around. If my thinking is negative, I will feel negative. You can't feel negative and bring your thinkings in line. You have to start with your mind first. Example. Oh no. Step speaking today. Boring, boring, boring. Feel fed up. Oh, Deb is speaking today. I wonder what God wants to say to me. I feel excited. Stupid example, but that's reality. How we think, how we portray things here will affect what's going on in here. It's our state of mind. Attitude is really important. This is cheesy, but I put it on there. Your attitude determines the altitude. It's very cheesy, isn't it? If you think positive, you're going to be in a positive mindset. If you think negative, you're going to be down. So that's what that means. So if you have emotional baggage, God can heal you. You can live as a product of the past, or you can live as a product of what Jesus did on the cross. And we have a choice. We do not have a choice about what has happened to us in the past, but we do have a choice about where we go for the future. Will we let our past memories taint our present and our future? There are real things that happen to us, but Jesus wants to come and set us free. Now, I'm going to give you a little testimony of mine, which is it's quite vulnerable, but we got over this a long time ago. My negative emotional stuff is normally to do with self-worth. And I was born in a really good family. I have an amazing family. But I've said previously, I've gone into some stuff from my family history. I had a soil of insecurity and rejection on the inside of me, which was generational, which you can hear on another thing if you want to. So I have two sides to my family who I love really dearly, and I just want to set that at the straight. One side of my family were very beautiful. The other, my family, loved them dearly, but my gran was affectionately known as Fat Gran. As a little girl, I adored my gran, but unfortunately, I had an uncle who constantly told me I was just like my gran. Now, bearing in mind my soil was rejection and unacceptance and inferiority and on all of those things, all I wanted to do was be like my beautiful side of the family. And all I was told was that I was like my fat gran. And this had a profound effect on me because my uncle did not do anything maliciously. He was not unkind. But the words that he spoke over me affected me. And we're from Cornwall, and it's all rugby teams and prop forwards. And he used to tell me I was Port Levenville. Now, that won't mean anything to you unless you're from Cornwall. But renowned Port Levenville was as wide as they were tall, with legs like trees. And he used to tell me that I was Port Levenville, that I had rugby players' legs. The consistent things that he said to me, and you're just like your gran, you're exactly your gran. When you grow up, you're going to be just like your gran, over and over. And that's what I thought, so much so that I actually saw myself like her. I think it's called body dysmorphia. But when I looked in the mirror, that's what I saw. I saw myself like that. No, I've never been like that. And even if I was, that's okay. But the fact is, I bought into something in my emotions which made me unacceptable, rejected, unlovable, inadequate, inferior. I didn't like it. And that really shaped me for many years to come, because I had a view of myself and I was desperate to be like my beautiful aunties. So I just looked for people to tell me that I was acceptable. I needed to know, I needed to be told, I needed to feel that, I needed to feel attractive. Now, I was robbed for years of my identity, because at the end of the day, we all know it's not about what you look like, it's about who you are. But because of the insecure soil on the inside of me, that's what it became. Many years down the road, I made some awful choices and some awful decisions which took me to a really dark place. Based on that, my emotional stuntedness, if you like, and then I got into fear, condemnation and shame. I gave my life back to Jesus. I became reconnected to God. I knew God had got a plan and a purpose for my life, but I lived in shame and condemnation. I couldn't do anything without these little voices saying, "Who do you think you are? Call yourself Christian after what you did? Net, 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 net." itty bitty committee. They shape us. We need to say no, no more. This is not who I am. We need to step out from under this. For me, it was a difficult process. It was in the really early days when we were just coming into this stuff and I was a guinea pig on most things. But I stand here now changed. I stand here now transformed, and I can tell you this works. Jesus works. I might not have been through some of the terrible things that you have been through, but Jesus, he didn't just die for one thing. He died for all of it. He bought all of it. He can heal everything and transform us. So for me, I had to own where I had believed. I had to see that I'd been robbed. I had to see that my uncle actually, it wasn't very nice what he did. He didn't mean it. I don't want to give myself a problem with my uncle. But when we identify debts that have been done, what we're saying is, because of this, I ended up like this. And that's the debt when it robs us from God's best. So I had to acknowledge that and own that, and I had to work through forgive and release. I had to renounce my own self, repent where I believe lies. I cursed myself. Words are powerful. Their life and death is in the power of the tongue. Things are powerful. I had to break curses over myself. I needed to have some deliverance. I needed healing. I needed to get into God to find out what he said about me. It's a process. But do you know what I didn't have that we have now? We have heaven open to us. We can step through and we can encounter Jesus face to face. And one second encounter with Jesus can transform you like that. That's amazing. That's what I'd encourage for all of you. But we don't know, do we? We don't see where we're robbed and we just get on with life. It's just who we are. It's just who I am. It was just me. I didn't know that everybody didn't think about that. I remember telling you a testimony here before where I was in a meeting one day and someone said something about an eating disorder because I didn't have anorexia, I didn't have bulimia, but I just really starved myself and, you know, trying to get thin so I looked like fat ran, which wasn't reality anyway. One day somebody brought that in a meeting and I felt that a knife had gone into my heart. That she was talking just to me. And at that point, I said to someone, as soon as I meet someone new, first thing I say is, hello, Sue, nice to meet you, but you think I'm fat and ugly. Not out loud, that's what was going on in the inside of me. I didn't know that everybody didn't feel the same, that everybody didn't think that way. You don't, because we just get on with it. We just cope with life. And it's time that we say, no, I have been robbed for far too long. We all talk about our funny little ways. If they're robbing us, let's get rid of those funny little ways. As Christians, we do not have to struggle on. It's heartbreaking when we see Christians who are just living in the past, living under their wounds, because Jesus came to give us victory, freedom, and peace. Again, it's not about denying our emotions. It's about acknowledging them and then inviting Jesus, the healer, deep on the inside. Emotions, we've said, can lie, and we need to be careful. And for you guys at the community, I'll just encourage you with this one, because we need to be careful, because sometimes things feel right. Just feels right. There's a song by Sophie Ellis Bextor, and this says, if this ain't love, why does it feel so good? And that's why, as Christians, we need to have our foundations based in God, based in Jesus, based in the truth. Because that's how we're going to live in victory. That's how we're going to come into our destiny. Not, well, it feels all right. Must be all right for me to do it then. Because our emotions can be out of control and they can get us in all sorts of mischief. So be careful. Temptation, we talked about that last week. When those thoughts come, we need to grab them at this entrance to our minds at that point. We've not acted on anything. When a thought comes, if it's going to lead you down a wrong pathway, what do you need to do with it? Grab hold of it then, because once your emotions become involved, it's much more difficult to turn away from. Okay. We are not shaped as much by what is happening around us as we are by how we view what is happening. Again, this is a really important thing to grab hold of. Life's events don't control who we are. God determines who we are, and our view of life's events determines how well we handle the pressures. In reality, we have little control over our feelings, but we do have control over our thoughts, and our thoughts determine our feelings and how we act. We need to see these things really linked closely together. Now, this is another, I'll try and whiz through it because it's quite long, but it's a classic one of perception. So, who was Lavender? Who was this person? You know, this man? Jeremiah, was it? Was it Jeremiah? Okay, so Jeremiah was a prophet in the Bible, and he's in this bit of a state, and he says, cut off from every avenue of escape, God has fenced me in, and he tied me up with heavy chains, crying and carrying on, doing me no good. God shuts out my prayer, and closed in and blocked by walls of cut stone. What paths I have left, he's twisted and confused my steps. So he's got a pretty negative view of God at this point in time, hasn't he? Dangerous as a stalking lion or a lurking bear, God lies in wait for me, dragging me off the path and tearing me up. He has left me desolate. Drawing back his bow, God aims straight at me with his own arrow. Every true arrow is ready in his quiver, now sinking to my gut. Echoing taunts ring around me from the mouths of my own people, laughing and joking about me all day long. Enough! He has filled me with bitterness, saturated me with gall. For he crushes my teeth with a mouth filled with gravel. He humiliates me, trampling me in ashes. Fragmented, myself knows no peace. I cannot remember what it's like to be happy. Failed, I say to myself. My hope fails in the face of what the Eternal One has done. It's a pretty negative view of God at the moment, isn't he? He's feeling in a pretty bad place. Grievous thoughts of affliction and wandering plague my mind. Great bitterness and gall. Grieving, my soul sinks back. Hang on a minute. These thoughts cripple and I sink down. Gaining hope, I remember, and I wait for this thought. How enduring is God's loyal love? The Eternal has inexhaustible compassion. Here they are, every morning anew. Your faithfulness, God, is as broad as the day. Have courage, for the Eternal is all that I will need. My soul boasts, hope in God. Just wait. It is good. The Eternal One is good to those who expect him, to those who seek him wholeheartedly. It is good to wait quietly for the Eternal to make things right again. This is the perception. Can you see? Emotions completely out of control. Mind completely out of control. All of a sudden he says, hang on a minute. That's not a really good representation of God. So he starts to think about God in reality and he brings his thoughts in line. But then what happens? Everything else comes into perspective. It's really important that we get the right perspective. So we can have general circumstances that shape us, and we can have one-off events. But one thing that really can shape us, just to be aware of, is I'm sure we can all relate at some point to falling in love or having a first love. When that goes wrong, which it does most of us on the first time round, we need to examine how did we deal with that. Because if you never deal with that first time that you open your heart to someone, you live with a wall around your heart. It is then very difficult to form other relationships, but also it's very difficult to form intimacy with God if you've got a big wall around your heart. And for some people I've prayed over in the past, I've prayed with, and they've never got over that first love. And what that means is, at a time when they meet someone else, they haven't got that to give away. They haven't got those emotions, those feelings, that space on the inside of them, because that's already been taken by someone else. And I'll just encourage you, if that applies to you, if you feel, I got so hurt, I'm never going there again, you've made vows, you've put a wall around you, let God break that down. Because ultimately, that will be a wall also in your relationship with God. Betrayal, a huge, huge negative emotion. If you've been betrayed, huge. Let God into that place. Disappointment, massive area. Let God in. Hopelessness, really difficult emotion to be in hope for and in faith for. When God started to talk to me about taking some form of responsibility in government and talk to me about the Good News Mountain, God said to me that I had authority to bring good news to people, but he said, you need to deal with your hopelessness. And there were various situations in my life that I was felt hopeless. And I wasn't in faith for God to change. And God said to me, you're never going to be able to do this until you deal with that and deal with hopelessness. So that's why now I can bring hope, because I did. I dealt with it. So for those of us who've been Christians a long time, we might have dealt with a lot of these deep roots, and now it's an ongoing life choice that we just keep our emotions in line with God. If you're new on your journey, then don't be overwhelmed today. There is hope. We have the tools here. You can encounter Jesus in a minute, and he can heal you in an area that you have never let him into before. Forgive and release is a huge tool. Cleansing of our memories. We've got lie busts that were incredible. Sometimes when we're go through trauma, we can get stuck. Part of us can be stuck. And lie busting is an incredible tool that has an opportunity to go back to an age with someone to say, what happened at that time? And somebody will be emotionally stunted and stuck at that age and fragmented. And Jesus just wants to bring us back into wholeness. He wants us to be complete. So lie busting is a tool that we have. We have going to the courts, facing the accusations. We have deliverance. We have healing. You know, all of that is available to us. If after this you think, I think I need some help from Karen, she can set you up an appointment and we can pray for each other. Okay, so we need the truth on the inside so we can see from God's perspective. If what we believe isn't based on God's word, what we feel won't reflect reality. Your belief system determines your thoughts, your actions. The way you think determines the way you feel determines the way you act. You cannot have a positive life and a negative mind. Okay, we've done that. So, I have been shaped by my DNA, my nature, which comes from my mother, my father, and my generations. I've been shaped by my nurture, which is my environmental upbringing, and trauma. All of those things affect me. At salvation, Jesus, God as Father, and the Holy Spirit came to live on the inside of me, in my spirit. They've made their home. Do you know that God has made his home on the inside of you? As I open my first love door, a gateway, we do that often, Revelation 3:20, the glory of God that lives in me flows out, fills my spirit, and goes from my spirit into my soul, from my soul through my body, outwards. The idea is that heaven that's on the inside of me flows out and affects everybody that I come into contact with. It's only going to be able to flow out of me if I don't have blockages and things in the way. So I need to make sure that my blockages are being dealt with. God's Spirit is alive in me and wants to rule. Heaven wants to rule in me and through me so that I can affect change. I can bring righteousness and justice. I can be a demonstration of Jesus. I am Jesus here. What you see of me is what I am reflecting. So if I'm not reflecting Jesus very well, you're not getting a very good idea of what heaven and Jesus is like. And that's for all of us. It's not meant to condemn you. It's exciting because we are agents of change. We are ambassadors. We are demonstrating a different lifestyle. So as my wounds are healed, then I am going to be flowing more with God. Then my acceptance, my belonging, my purpose, my significance are going to flow from what God says about me. And then I am going to be different. So, we all have situations that will occur. And this is a classic one for me. I had a new grandson on Thursday. So, Thursday, I was so excited. I was like Tigger here, jumping, bouncing around. Emotions, extremely excited, amazing. And then there was a call to say there was a complication that might be surgery that wasn't going so well. Immediately, what did? My emotions were like, oh no, oh. No, that was my choice. Natural emotions, yes. Elation 1 minute could very easily have gone into fear, anxiety, worry the next minute. That's where I had a choice. So I said, no, not having this. This baby's not having surgery. My daughter's not having surgery, so we were working, so we got together, so we prayed. And we stood together for peace, for this baby to come out, and he did. Can you see, at times, how our emotions, my emotions could have overwhelmed me, and I could have gone right down into fear, but I recognised it and I grabbed hold of it and it didn't happen. This has got to be our lifestyle. Jeremiah 29 says, I know the plans I have for you, plans to give you a future and a hope. That's for all of us. That's true because God is truth, God is love. And when those things happen, if we base our reality in that, no matter what happens to us, we know that God's got us. So whether you're going for a job, whether you're looking for a career, whatever it is, decision that you are making, like Jay was saying about his house, he prayed about it. But I know that he was really peaceful that God would give him the right place. And he did, within 3 weeks, which was amazing. But that comes out of saying, God, I know you've got me. And it takes away a lot of worry and fear and anxiety because we no longer have to do it ourselves. It just requires us to relinquish control and to say we're going to do it God's way. Because the most amazing emotion that we can have is peace. And we get peace when we relax and we give over things to God and we can trust him. Just out of interest, I was looking, these are some emotions that Jesus had. You can look these up, I'm not going to look them up. Jesus experienced love, joy, grief, compassion, anger, gratitude, wonder, desire, peace, loneliness. I'm sure there are loads, loads more. Actually, emotions are from God, and we want a full range of them. So let's just be determined that we are not going to live in the past anymore, but we're going to come into everything that God has for us. Psalm 23, if you want to meditate on something, this is the most incredible psalm because everything that you need is in this psalm. The Lord is my shepherd. That means he guides me. I shall not want. He's going to provide for me. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He gives me rest. He leads me beside quiet waters. That's quite peaceful. He restores my soul. No matter what's going on the inside of you, he restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yet even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, even though times are tough, even though some things don't work out quite right like I expect them to, I fear no evil. Why? Because you are with me. Your rod, your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. That means whatever you need is there for you. You prepare a table in the presence of my enemies. Whatever you're going through, God's provision is there. You have anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. Abundant provision and blessing. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So I'd encourage you, whichever version you want, Psalm 23, meditate on it. Sit down with it. Read it, close your eyes, picture yourself in it, and allow God to meet with you. So now we have a choice. I'm sure God has shown us some things that maybe we want to be free from. We can deal with them, or we can sit in them. But now we have a choice. So what I would like to do is I would like us to close our eyes and we have a picture that I've said before about a baby with a rucksack. And you have a baby who's been all washed, cleaned. I can equate this now to my new baby grandson. Smelling of baby lotion and cotton and talc and all of those things. And on his back is a rucksack full of dirty nappies. And I've just got a new Hoover, which is an amazing new Hoover. And again, if the pipe is blocked in the Hoover, no matter much power and resources there is, nothing is going to get through. It's time to declutter. So I'll just encourage you now to close your eyes. Just imagine that you are in a huge, great, big green meadow with flowers all around, and there's a gentle stream. Really close by. You can hear the water. It's so peaceful. And you see someone coming towards you. A and you know that it's Jesus. And he comes over, he stands near you, and he looks at you. And you see the love in his eyes. And he affirms you. And he tells you how precious you are. And you see his hands and he holds them out to you. And he says, give me your cares. And he has a basket and he invites you to put in that basket of things that have caused you pain, your emotional wounds, your anxieties, your hurts. And he says to you, let this be your place of exchange. Give me your past, that I can give you my future. Receive his forgiveness, his love. Let him take the weight off your shoulders. As he looks to you now, he puts his finger under your chin and he tilts your head up to look in his eyes. And the love in his eyes goes straight down deep and brings such healing. Let his peace overwhelm you. Stay in that place as long as you want to. Just let his love overwhelm you and heal those deep areas. Maybe that you've never opened up before. Talk to him, tell him, and receive from him.